Blog Talk Radio.
Huh. Okay, we're still not working. Hi, everybody. Welcome to The Whole Scoop. We are a health and wellness radio show. Our guests are always highly credentialed, but you already know that. I'm sure that you've been listening for a while. So we have credentialed guests. That's the stipulation for being on this show. Sometimes we show opposite perspectives for our listeners, but the main goal is to let you make informed decisions about the right health approach for you. I am your host, Carol Ferraci, a registered licensed dietitian practicing for over 30 years and the founder of Naturally Nutrition. You can find me at naturallynutritioninc.com. So, again, you know that it's important for me to always provide you highly qualified guests. Guess what? Tonight's show, the name might have caught you a little off guard, but it's going to be fabulous. It's called Catch the Flow When You Gotta Go. Let me remind you that while our guests are always highly credentialed on the topics of discussion, it's important that you seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on this program. Call-in number is 347-855-8894. You can also direct questions and comments to our Facebook Blog Talk Radio page, which is the Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio group, and please join us. We're always looking for comments, questions, ideas for shows. Just ask for an invite. We'll accept you. It's open to the public. So that is the Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio group. Again, the call-in number is 347-855-8894. We'll be taking questions later on in the show. At that time, I'm going to call out the last four digits of your telephone number. When you want to ask a question, please remember to press the number 1 to get in the calling question queue. Okay, so all that business is out of the way. Let's talk about who's on tonight's show. You know, I'm always amazed at the caliber of people that we get on this show, and this is absolutely no exception tonight. This is Jane Kaufman. She has been practicing physical therapist for more than 30 years. She's a graduate of Ithaca College Physical Therapy Program, and she's earned her master's at the University of Vermont. More recently, she was certified by the Biofeedback Certification Institute of America in pelvic muscle dysfunction biofeedback, becoming one of only 6 healthcare professionals in the Northeast to earn this prestigious certification. That's amazing. Jane's career has included practicing at various medical and physical therapy centers in New York and Vermont. She's a professional speaker for the University of Vermont's Physical Therapy Program and OBGYN residents, as well as presentations for grand rounds for the family practice and OBGYN departments at Fletcher Allen Healthcare. She also speaks before prostate cancer support groups and community outreach programs and has been a guest presenter on Vermont Public Television's Vital Signs Medical Program and Across the Fence, a community service program. She's been an adjunct associate professor in the University of Vermont's Department of Physical Therapy for more than 20 years. She's served on many professional boards and committees, and her own recent focus as a member of the advisory board for UVM's School of Allied Health and Nursing. In recent years, Jane has focused on men's and women's health issues, which are positively resolved through appropriate physical therapy treatment. Her success in assisting men with prostate dysfunction and women with a variety of incontinence issues has made her an authority and leader in the specialized area of physical therapy in Vermont. You will find her at phoenixpt.com. And now with that, let's bring Jane on and say hello and say welcome, Jane.
Thank you so much for this opportunity to speak with everyone tonight, and I appreciate all your kind words. First of all, What I'd like to do is just mention to everyone that there's one thing that I want to demystify right now. Leaking is not a normal part of aging. So whether you're listening and you're 70 years old, whether you're 20 years old, whether you have a child that has a problem or a husband that has a problem, leaking is not the normal part of the aging process. And once we realize that, we realize that we can fix this problem. And it's a unique problem because we all have different experiences with it, and that's going to influence how we view the problem. There are a variety of types of incontinence that I'll talk about in just a minute, but one thing that I think is also important to know is there is a muscle in our body that's hidden by our body parts, and it's kind of across from our hips. It's down in our pelvic area at the base of our pelvis. So it's below the tip of our spine. And this muscle is critical to control for incontinence. This muscle is under our voluntary control, which means you can tighten it and you can release it. You do that on command, just like you might do a bicep curl at the gym. You tighten your muscle, you release your muscle. Or you straighten your leg, you bend your leg. And by learning control over this hidden muscle, you get to learn control over the problem that's bothering you. So in terms of the bladder, there's a couple of different types of issues that can present itself, and it's complex. So when Carol first started talking tonight, she said, as always, make sure you go to a health professional, a doctor, to make sure before you start any kind of a treatment. And that's really critical with this particular muscle because there's so many things that can go on with this particular part of your body. So if you leak when you sneeze or cough or you laugh a lot and you have to be one of those women who crosses your legs because you're laughing and giggling, that's called stress incontinence. It doesn't deal with stress in your life. It deals with pressure that gets created on your abdomen. Like if you sneeze or cough, you know how your stomach muscles contract. Well, that puts pressure on your bladder because your bladder is at the very base of your trunk. So it's right above that little bone that sits kind of around where your abdominal muscles attach to other muscles and towards your hip. So if you sneeze or cough or laugh or maybe bend down in the garden to pull a weed or you pick up a bag of dog food or you pick up a child, you might squirt a little bit of pee, and that's called stress incontinence. But then there's a type of incontinence called urge incontinence, and that's when you might be in the car doing some grocery shopping and you don't even think about your bladder, but 15 minutes later you pull in your driveway and you're like, oh my goodness, I have to go, and I have to go right now. You jump out of the car and you race like a track star to the toilet, knocking everybody else out of the way, and sometimes you can't get your pants down fast enough and you're already peeing. And urge incontinence has perhaps more of an impact. They're both important, but it may have a little more of an impact because it's usually a larger leak that occurs. So with urge incontinence, you might wet your pants, but stress incontinence, you just might dampen your underwear, okay? And so there's a little bit of a difference with that. But urge incontinence is part of what we call a conditioned response, which means the more it happens, the closer you get to the toilet, your body says, oh, good, she's getting there. She's going to be at the door in just a second, and we can't wait to empty. And then your muscle lets go and your bladder leaks just as you're approaching the toilet. If you have both types of incontinence, it's called mixed incontinence. And there are plenty of women, and it doesn't matter your age, but there are plenty of women who experience these problems. The research says that most women will wait up to 6 years before they seek medical attention for an incontinence problem. So
years?
Let's just say it's 6 years. That's right.
Wow.
And it's because, oh, okay, let's just take the 30-year-old woman who's had a child, okay? And she says, mm-hmm. Oh, well, I just had a baby. Oh, I sneezed. I leaked. Oh, well, of course I leaked. All my friends leaked. They had babies. If you have a child, you leak, which is a false statement, remember. So they leak a little bit of urine, and then they say, oh, well, I'll just go to the bathroom more often, or I'll put a panty liner in my pants. And then time goes by, and then maybe they put in a bigger pad, or they change that panty liner numerous times. And then they find themselves going to the bathroom more often. So over the course of a couple years without medical attention, perhaps the same woman who's now driving her child to preschool goes to the bathroom before she gets in the car with her child, takes her child to preschool, drops him off at preschool, pees again before she leaves preschool, goes to the grocery store, goes to the gym, whatever the case is, goes to the bathroom again, turns around, goes back to preschool to pick up the child, goes to the bathroom again, and now all of a sudden she's peeing all the time. And if she doesn't pee all the time, she wets. So 6 years later.
Is that typical of what happens? It progresses without intervention?
Absolutely. If you don't do something about it, if you don't use it, you lose it, and it only gets worse. The presence.
So can it happen at any age, and can it be treated at any age?
Absolutely. I have a practice that's solely based on incontinence and muscle treatments for this problem. You would never come see me like you would another physical therapist for hip problems or knee problems. We only deal with this muscle. And our patient population is 5 years old to 97 years old. So
okay,
anyone...
Let's break that down for just a second, okay? Because as you just said that, something just flashed in my head. So I'm gonna go from one end of the lifespan to the other. So we're going to go from the 5-year-old to the 97-year-old. With the 5-year-old, I want to reserve that one for a second, but I want to go right to the 97-year-old, because what went through my head is, what 97-year-old, what 90-year-old, what 80-year-old thinks that, I think you said it earlier, you know, just because I'm older, it happens. But which one of those are going to actually say, oh, I can get treatment for this? Because there's such a there's so many things attached to this. There's the stigma of not wanting to talk about it. There's not only do we have that in terms of the social aspect, but we also have people just ingrained thinking that the older I get, these things happen. Oh, well, I guess I have to live like this. So how do you get people to you, or how do we get them to know about you? And then what do we do to get, you know, more people to understand that they don't have to just do this?
Okay. And that's a really interesting an interesting way to put it. First of all, we see many of these older folks who perhaps are at a risk for falling on the way to the toilet. So maybe they have balance issues. Maybe they've had a couple of joints replaced. So they've got total hips or total knees. Or they have macular degeneration where they can't see well.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they just have balance issues related to a previous stroke or some other medical condition. And so they kind of wobble, or they take their time getting to the toilet. So they're at risk for falling, and if the statistics show that if you're at a higher risk for falling on the way to the toilet and you get up either frequently at night and or you hurry to the toilet during the day, if you fall, you're likely to break a hip or an arm, and that could land you in a nursing home if you're
in the 90s. So let's talk about that one for a second. Why? Yeah. I mean, I'm listening to this. I'm going to pretend to be one of my listeners and hear what you just said. So if I have any one of those issues and I'm trying to get to the bathroom in the middle of the night, I have a bigger chance of breaking my hip, or I have a bigger chance of falling, or both?
Both.
Both. Okay.
So if you
and
fall and you're 90-some-odd years old, you're likely to break a bone, according to the statistics. Okay. And why would you fall? Maybe you're disoriented. Maybe you're dizzy. Maybe... I've heard of patients who actually, when they get up out of bed, they actually pee on the floor, and then they can slip through that. So there's all kinds of things that can lead to that. So if someone gets up more than once or twice at night, they're more likely to leak. And what older folks do when they're worried about leaking or they can't get to the toilet easily, they put on the underwear type of pads, and they wear big pads. The more you wear the big pads, the more you become dependent on those pads, because your brain does an interesting thing. It says, don't worry about leaking. You can walk to the bathroom slowly. There's a pad there to protect you. We call it insensate loss. We call it, you know, preconditioned responses, but your body says, it's all right to leak, so just leak. So the more you use the pads, the more you get wet. But at the same time, you need those pads. You get into this vicious cycle. So older folks maybe told when they go to their physician for an annual checkup, the doctor may say, you know, you have this risk for falling. We're concerned about what you're doing during the day because you have some other health issues related to using the bathroom, and I can get into some of the other things that happen with your bowel because it gets all complicated. But when you go to the bathroom, you're getting wet. Maybe you have infections. If you sit in a wet pad, you could get a urinary tract infection. You could get a skin infection if you sit in the pads too long. So whatever the reason is, there are multiple things that can happen. But the physician may say, I want you to go seek physical therapy to work on fixing this problem because we don't want you falling. We want your skin condition to improve, and we don't want you to have, for example, constipation. So patient comes in and she says,
Give me 1 second. Is it something they can ask for, or should they wait for their physician to recommend it?
Well, interestingly enough, it becomes a regional process throughout the country. So wherever somebody's listening, if their community has a major medical center, yes, they may have a physical therapist, or their doctors may know of someone who treats, and it could be a nurse or a nurse practitioner, who treats this muscle and knows how to manage the problems associated with this muscle, and the muscle is called the pelvic floor, but associated with this muscle, they may know a provider who's skilled in managing the problem. If you're someplace way out in the country that you don't have a lot of medical help nearby, it may be harder to find a provider. So I find when I go around the country and I give lectures that it depends on the region that you're located in terms of how many people are available and knowledgeable about the help. I know in my community, because I've had a private practice for a long time, the physicians immediately say, I'm sending you to Phoenix Physical Therapy. So as soon as the patient talks about it, the doctor knows how to manage the problem, and he sends the patient to us.
Okay, so what are some of the causes for this, Jane? I mean, I want the people listening to understand that there are various causes, right? And it's not just one thing.
The list
certainly
goes on
not
and
age.
On and on. Yep. And sometimes when I do health fairs or presentations, I shock myself a little bit when I make a list of all the potential causes because I think there's well over 100 of different causes.
Oh, wow.
And in medicine, there's always at least two names for everything. So one doctor might call it one thing and another doctor calls it something else, but it means the same sort of thing. So as we age, let's talk about the elderly folks first. As we age, we lose the estrogen in our bodies as females. So I'm just talking about women right now. And when we lose our estrogen, we lose our pluffy muscle, and we lose the ability to have a soft and a solid and a thicker muscle in different parts of our bodies. I don't know about you, but if I pick up a barbell and I start doing arm weights, I'm like, nothing's changing instantly. I'm looking for the instant cure. I want these beautiful arms that look great, like you see on television and these other people. And so our muscles throughout our body, our skeletal muscles change when we lose our estrogen. They don't respond to exercises readily. It takes more exercise to change the muscle tone and develop definition to the muscle. Well, this muscle at the base of our pelvis is composed of the same kind of muscle fibers as our arms and our legs. So it responds to exercise the same way as other parts of our body do. But we can't see the muscle, and it only moves a little bit. And so we don't think about it. We just go through life and we say, oh, whoops, I just peed. Whoops, I better, you know, be aware of that. I better put a pad on. And then at some point in time, someone comes and says, you know, you need to strengthen that muscle to change that muscle. Well, how do you strengthen it? You strengthen it through a series of exercises. And you try to bring about the different components to making good bladder health associated with that muscle. So if you leaked in your pants, the first thing you probably would do is either go to the bathroom more often, or you would drink less fluids, or both. So we know that people should consume 6 to 8 cups of fluid a day. But if you're elderly, let's say you're in your 80s, your bladder doesn't stretch as much. So you might drink 4 to 6 cups of fluid. But what does everybody like to drink when they're older? Coffee, tea, cranberry juice. And not very much of it, because that's not what that generation is used to doing. So we have to consume more fluids, because the fluids help to reduce the irritation of a concentrated urine. Have you ever like been running or not had a lot of fluids, and then you go pee and the toilet has darker pee in it, and you're like, ooh, wow, that smells. I can smell that. It's because it's concentrated. So we want to have the urine more diluted, and we do that through having more fluids throughout the day.
So isn't that kind of a catch-22, though?
It is. It's hard to explain it to people. You're like, you have to listen. I'm sorry. I know you think that you'll be better off if you don't drink fluids, but the reality is you're better off if you do drink fluids. And people cut down on the amount of if they drink their fluids.
So
it is tough. Sometimes you have to really spend time convincing people of the importance of all of this.
Well, and I would imagine that if I'm an elderly person, I would assume that the elderly population is very difficult to convince of this because of all the things you just said and more that we haven't even begun to talk about.
Exactly. And sometimes the job is to explain it to them over and over and over again. But who wants to listen?
All right.
Go ahead.
So let's add another variable to this, okay? And then
okay.
I want to get into the 5-year-old for a second. But if let's add the variable of a health issue that has caused an incontinence issue. So what we were just talking about is your basic stress incontinence or age incontinence or genetic incontinence or change of life, whatever you want to talk about. But now,
right.
Let's just say that you have that along with a particular health issue, and you can name the health issue. Let that be yours, either male or female or both. And now, are your exercises? And I want you to define your exercises, and maybe I believe. And I am in no way, shape, or form an expert in this area. You are. But are there exercises that they can do while they're listening to this program even? And
absolutely. Okay.
So maybe you could walk us through that after we kind of do this, just kind of bring in a health issue variable and whether or not it's workable, doable, treatable.
Okay. So let's make this up, and let's take an 85-year-old woman who's had 6 kids. She's living in assisted living. She wears pads, okay, underwear pads, and she goes through a couple of them in the day, and she's up 3 times at night.
Right.
She doesn't like to drink a lot of water because she's afraid of drinking fluid, so she has a cup or two of coffee in the morning and maybe some coffee at lunch or at her afternoon group activity. And perhaps in a meal she has those little cups of juice or water, which are, I think, probably about 4 ounces. So let's just say she has a total of 3 cups of what I would call a bladder irritant, which would be the coffee or maybe tea. And then she has maybe a cup and a half at the most of a juice or a water. And she pees all the time. And she can't get to the toilet, but she knows she has the pad, so she's okay. But she gets up several times at night. Well, normal voiding habits for anyone should be about 6 or 8 times a day, provided they have good fluids that when the fluids come out into the toilet, they're a pale yellow. That means you're hydrated. But she will say she leaks on the way to the toilet, and perhaps she walks with a walker. So just the normal aging process is enough to have her wear the pads and have her have a problem. But let's say she has a history of urinary tract infections. Well,
okay.
We need her to drink more, but we also need her to sit on the toilet in a proper toilet posture. So if you're sitting in your chair while you're listening to this show, I want you to lean slightly forward so that your forearms, you know, maybe your wrist is at your knees and your elbow is a little further back, but flat on your thighs, okay? And then you want your legs as far apart as your shoulders, even a little further apart is totally fine. And when you sit in that position, that slightly leaned forward position, and sit there for a full, believe it or not, a full 2 minutes to get your pee out, you might actually do a better job at peeing. But we're all in a hurry. We go in, we do a little pee, we get up, we leave. But a lot of older folks take a little bit longer to pee. So learning to get all the pee out is really helpful. Increasing fluids. But if you went home and you said, oh, I listened to this radio show and I now am told that I have to drink 6 cups of water a day. If you start doing that right away, tomorrow, that would be like rain in the desert. It would run off, wouldn't it? Your body wouldn't be used to it, and you'd pee all the time. You'd be miserable. So you slowly, gradually increase it to make it workable for you. So some people, we prefer everyone to drink clear water because it's almost like a medicine. It just helps to keep your body healthy, and it helps your body grow and replenish other functions and fluids. But some people just can't do that. So we have to come up with individual ways to come up with things that they can do, that they can drink, that are acceptable to them. So withholding fluids doesn't work. But the other thing we do besides getting a good flow of pee is we want a patient to learn what it feels like to tighten their muscle, such as when they're going to get out of a chair. And then we want them to feel what it feels like to release their muscle, which is what you would do on the toilet. You never squeeze your muscle and release your muscle on the toilet. Years and years and years ago, doctors used to talk about that. But now we know that doing that is harmful to our bodies. So
can you say that one more time? Can you
sure.
just say what that just
so,
that one more time?
Okay. So what we've learned over the years through research and through more information about how people function and how this muscle functions, we don't want people to sit on the toilet and squeeze their muscle, release their muscle, squeeze their muscle and release their muscle. Because
isn't that what everybody used to teach all the time?
They used to tell you to squeeze and release on the toilet. That's correct. And we don't want that because over time, if you do that, your bladder shuts down and it doesn't get all the pee out. When your bladder shuts down and doesn't get all the pee out, you run the risk for infection by not emptying your bladder, and you run the risk of getting your muscle to forget what it is that it needs to do. So when you sit on the toilet, the idea is to sit in that posture where your forearms are on your thighs and maybe your wrists are over your knees and you're leaning slightly forward. Your knees are wide apart, so they're at least equally as far apart as your shoulders. Even a little further is good, but we don't sit up straight with our legs together because that encourages tension. When you sit on the toilet to pee, your muscle has to release and be relaxed. So let that muscle go is really critical, but also learning to strengthen it is important if you leak.
Huh.
We want to be able to have the right ratio of what goes on. So the elderly woman who's in her mid-80s, who lives in an assisted living and maybe has urinary and tract infections, has to focus on good fluids, legs apart, leaning slightly forward, and making sure she pees, say, every 2 hours. But people don't think about when they have to go pee.
But what about the middle of the night? Are they supposed to get up in the middle of the night every 2 hours?
No, this is only during the day. That's a good point. if someone gets up on their own in the middle of the night, we only want them to get up once, maybe twice, no more than that. So people who get up three or four times, if they empty during the day and sit the way they're supposed to and pee the way they're supposed to, they can cut down on how much comes out at night. And
so
don't have
it up three or four times at night. They may reduce that to two times a night if they pee sitting in the right position during the day.
And having good fluids and peeing every 2 hours during the day. So there's a lot of things
I know you just want to obsess with the concentration of urine and the fluids and making sure you have enough fluids. But I really want to make that point because I can hear, even though I haven't heard it yet, I can hear people thinking, oh, my God, I have to drink all this and then try to figure out how not to go to the bathroom at night and sit. So I really kind of want to make that point. It's really important to drink so that the urine is less concentrated, that the bladder has a better ability to function. And so when you sit appropriately on the toilet, as Jane just described, during the day, and you empty your bladder better, you're able to better empty your bladder with more fluid so that you actually have to empty it less during the night. Is that right, Jane?
That's correct. And you can't jump from no fluids to four cups like we're talking about. It's a gradual increase. So maybe if you're someone who doesn't drink any water now at all, just drink 1 8-ounce glass a day for a week. One glass a day for a week. That's 8 gulps. You can spread it out through the whole day, but it has to stop at dinner time. Then
all right,
next
what time
week,
is dinner time? Because dinner time is different for everybody.
It could be 4:30 if you go to bed at 7:30. Doesn't matter. Stop it whenever you eat dinner.
Okay.
So if you take that one glass and you start sipping on it at 10 a.m. and you get done with it at 4 p.m., okay, that's great. That's one glass. You did it. That's one glass more than you did last week. That's awesome. Next week, after doing that for several days, next week you try 2 glasses a day. If you're, say, in your 80s, you really don't need more than 4 glasses because your bladder isn't going to be as easily stretched as a 20-year-old bladder. So it all depends on age. But if you can drink some fluids to keep your pee from A, smelling, and B, looking dark yellow, you're good. That's great. That was going to help. But if you have your fluids after dinner and you say, oh, my goodness, I listened to Carol's show, and she told me to drink water, and I haven't had it all day, and it's now 7 p.m., and I'm going to bed in an hour, I'm going to drink 2 full glasses right now, you're going to be up all night long because your body's not used to it. So we want to limit that, okay? Which is why you also want to go and talk to your physician, because these are things that are really important to know. Everybody out here who's listening has a different problem and handles it in a different way.
Right. That's very true.
But if you have these issues, that's a way to address it. And then we need to talk about the exercise and what you do if you're younger and you need exercise.
Yeah, I'm gonna hold you on that one because I want to talk about that in just a second. But we have somebody that's been on hold with a question since we started the show, and that's been a half hour ago. So what I want to do is remind everybody that you're listening to the Whole Scoop Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Carol Ferraci, your host, a registered licensed dietitian. You'll find me at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. We're talking with Jane Kaufman tonight, a very, very fabulously educating show on incontinency. It's called Catch the Flow When You Gotta Go. Jane, you want to give out your website?
Sure. It's that's my email address. Never mind. I'm sorry. It's phoenixpt.com. So the website again is phoenixpt.com.
Perfect. Okay.
You can email me through that website as well.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You can email me through the website as well.
Okay, perfect. So let's go to the phones because we've got this person that's been hanging on, and I just want to make sure we get this person in because sometimes
sure.
things change. So we're going to go with caller 2205.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for staying on the phone and waiting.
I just had a question. I usually get frequent UTIs, and from what you've explained, also some stress reactions.
Yeah.
And I always kind of just took cranberry pills and just dealt with it. But I just had a question because sometimes I talk to friends about it, and they kind of said, like, oh, yeah, I get that all the time, like sometimes after sex. And I was wondering if that's something that aggravates it or is a reason why I have this problem. I was wondering if...
Okay, there's a couple of things that you said, and so you're going to have to remind me if I don't get quite to the issue, because the first thing is that the cranberry pills help you get rid of it. And some women have a condition that we call urethritis, which is a kind of an inflammation or a tension around the urethra, so your pee doesn't all come out, and it mimics a urinary tract infection. And women who think they have a urinary tract infection because they go all the time and it burns when they pee and they feel miserable and they go into the doctor's office and they say, I have to leave you a culture, and the doctor says, I know, you always leave a culture and it's always negative. And that's because you have a tense muscle. And so you can't get all the pee out. That's one thing. And that's a separate issue. So if you're someone who really does have bacteria in your bladder because perhaps you're not getting it all out, things to know is that before you're intimate with your partner, make sure you pee. And when you're done, make sure you pee again. And if you do that all the time...
So
ahead,
you're
Carol.
Supposed to pee first and then pee after?
Correct.
Okay.
And that way, that does help because there's a lot of transfer of fluids in this pelvic muscle. All of our openings, our urethra where the pee comes out, our vagina, and our rectum are all within a space of just like an inch and a half, 2 inches. They're all really close together. And all these openings are kind of like little garden hoses, if you will, okay? So if you're sitting there at home, take your left hand and spread the fingers of your hand and put your index finger, your middle finger, and your ring finger of your right hand between those fingers, okay? So you've kind of laced your fingers together. Left hand's on the bottom, right hand's on the top. Now squeeze your left hand. Squeeze those fingers of your left hand. You're going to pinch off the right hand. So let's think of that left hand, if you will, as your muscle. Think of your right hand as the openings for the functions, the urethra, the vagina, and the rectum. So if you've pinched those off, things aren't going to come out when they're supposed to. If you keep your hand really relaxed and your fingers can wiggle all around, then things are way too relaxed. So sometimes when these things happen, we've pinched off those openings and we can't get everything out, and it mimics a urinary tract infection, or it could even be a real urinary tract infection. I can't tell you that because I don't know. But the important thing is if you pee first and pee after being intimate, that might make a difference. If you say, huh, I've done that, it doesn't make a difference, then I would go talk to your healthcare provider and find out what other suggestions they have for you. Because on the phone, on the radio, I can't really say because I don't know enough.
Wow. That was a whole lot of information there, Jane. It's fabulous. Let me just say this. Okay, this is a subject that most people don't want to talk about, but the more that we do this, the more that we're talking tonight, the more we need to keep talking about it because there's just so much to understand and learn. I mean, so you're telling what I just got out of that, and caller, correct me if you think that I might be off base here, but if you think that you've had UTIs for so long, have you been treated with antibiotics as well each and every time? And, Jane, based on what you said, maybe that's not – it's just possible that it may not be that? Am I hearing all that right?
We need to see a physician. We need to know, do I have urinary tract infections or do I just have the tension in the muscle? And they both can appear the same. The pelvic floor can become a paradox, which means it can look like something that it's not. So you can have tension in the muscle and you can have the same symptom as a infection, but maybe you don't. Or the other way around. Maybe you think, oh, I don't have one, and that time you do. So you always have to err on the side of caution and go get tested. Because remember, we can't see any of this. So we have to base our information on what we're feeling. And so you need to seek the medical attention to find out what's really going on. There are some women that always do get real urinary tract infections, at which point they need to go and maybe have a prophylactic antibiotic. I mean, every physician is different in how they want to treat that. And honestly, as confusing and complex as this sounds, that's the interesting part of this whole process in treatment, because no two people ever look alike. They can have similar symptoms, but not everybody is the same. And that's the beauty of it. Oh, you just treat stress incontinence. No, we do a whole lot more than that, because we want to make every woman get out of this treatment what they need to carry on their life and perform their activities and daily living and go to work, et cetera, et cetera.
That's fabulous. Caller, does that answer your question, or do you have a follow-up, or...
Yes, thank you.
Does that help? I hope it does.
Yes, definitely. That was great information. Thank you.
All right, you take care of yourself.
Calling in.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Jane, we were going to go into the exercises, but let's take 5 minutes and let's talk about men, because we haven't really talked about men tonight. So let's bring the other half of the population in.
Okay, as long as you make sure I get back to the exercises, because that's important, and I'll lose my... Okay.
I'm gonna time you on this, and I'm going to give you 5 minutes, so we'll talk about men. We'll kind of wrap it in together, maybe a little longer than that, because men deserve a little more time than 5 minutes. So, and then we'll go from there, okay?
So men are really interesting, first of all. They're so different than all of us women, because a woman will say, when she calls up and she says, oh, my physician wants me to come in and see you, but I can't come next week because my grandchildren are coming to town. And you know what? The week after, I have to get my nails done. And the week after that, that's about the time that my bridge group meets. So can we make it after that? Okay. So that's kind of, because women have always dealt with issues down there. Whether it's been their periods, whether it's been urinary tract infections, anything else. So we're all like, oh, you know what? I've had it for a while. I can deal with it a little bit longer. Men call up and they say, I just left my doctor's office 10 minutes ago, and he wants me to come see you. Can I come in now? Do you have time today? Can I come tomorrow? So it's a whole different world. Men never cancel their appointments. Everything revolves around getting this problem taken care of. Men squeeze their muscles like crazy. They grab every muscle in their body. So I have to say to them, listen to me, less is more. Don't work so hard on this muscle. Relax. I only want one little tiny muscle to work. Don't stop your fluids just because you leak. You got to have the good fluids, and don't squeeze every muscle in your body. So what that particular piece means when we get to the exercises too, let's just say you and I are standing in front of the mirror and we want to do what I'm always trying to do, which is get my biceps to look bigger and look more toned. So I take the 5-pound barbell and I stand in front of the mirror and I squeeze my muscle and I release my arm and I squeeze my arm and I release my arm. And then I think, well, that's nothing. I didn't see anything change. What if I picked up a 25-pound barbell? So I bend down to the floor and I grab the 25-pound barbell and I try to squeeze it. But in the meantime, I'm squeezing every muscle in my body to try to lift this barbell. Am I doing a good job? Am I really getting my arm? The answer is no. I'm getting everything in my body but the muscle I really want to focus on. So when men have a problem, they love to grab every muscle in their body. And they can't do that because then they reduce the effectiveness of the muscle that's most important. So I have to teach them slow it down.
Say that one more time. Say that. I'm sorry. Just make that point one more time.
So they grab every single muscle in their body to squeeze it to try to grab that pelvic floor because they think that the harder I work, the more benefit I'm going to get. The
gotcha.
Reality
okay.
is there's less benefit. Okay?
Okay.
So we need, and I love working with the men. Now, you have to understand, I have a husband of 42 years, and I have 3 sons. So I like live in a man's world, and I'm used
yeah.
to the men, and I kind of get where they're coming from. And so I have to always tell them, less is more. Don't squeeze so hard. Back it off. If I say do 10 exercises, don't do 350. Only do the 10. So they're kind of fun because they have a different approach to how they handle things. But men can have three sets of main problems that we see. Of course, we see more than that, but there are 3 main ones. The first one is a gentleman has the need for prostate surgery because he perhaps has cancer of his prostate, or he does have cancer of his prostate. So there are 2 approaches for that. There is a what we call a retropubic approach, where there's an incision from the belly button down to the pubic bone in the front, which is kind of across from your 2 hips, but it's down the center. The second approach is with robotic surgery, where they insert little tiny sets of surgical instruments, and the physician looks at a massive computerized screen that magnifies everything beautifully. It's called the Da Vinci robotic, and it's wonderful in helping men with their treatment for incontinence. But men lose their prostate when they have surgery, and their prostate, at the top of their prostate, they have a valve that's a circular valve. It's exactly like our kitchen sink drain. So you know how you twist your kitchen sink drain and you twist it one way and it closes, and then you twist it the other way and it opens? Well, that's what this little
yep.
valve does inside these men's bodies. As women, we don't have it, but men do. And when they have prostate surgery, that valve gets traumatized. Eventually,
okay.
we all hope it comes back. Nobody knows for sure in everybody whether that's the case, but we all hope that it comes back. And until it does, men will have a problem with leaky bladders. They will have incontinence. So physical therapy.
They don't have that. It's about this and I'm going to use your terminology here, this valve that men have, and it's just in trauma.
It's trauma from the surgery.
It's a myth to think that, and I'm asking, okay, this is a question. Is it a myth to think that every man who undergoes prostate surgery will lose control of this particular function forever?
That is a myth, correct.
Really? Okay.
Any reason to think
that mentally they talk themselves into this later on?
Right.
Like that it does last forever?
You know, any type of a group can convince you of anything. And yes, it men will say, oh, I'm going to be stuck wearing Depends. And my answer is, no, you're not. If you work on this muscle, you can get control. You manage your fluids. It's the same thing I've told you about women, isn't it? Manage your fluids. Do the right amount of fluids. Pee every 2 hours during the day. Not at night, but during the day. Don't rely on the pads. Yes, in the beginning you need the pads. But after a while, if your pad is dry, if you wake up in the morning and your pad is dry, take that pad off and don't use it. Your pads become a crutch.
Hmm.
Not long ago I had hip surgery, and I had crutches. And, you know, maybe 3 months after the surgery, I was walking totally fine. And my husband said, there's a crutch still in the back of your car. You sure you need that in the trunk? And I'm like, you never know. When I go to the grocery store, I might want my crutch. Now, I'm a physical therapist, okay? He's
right.
like, I haven't seen you use the crutch. And if it's in the car, how's it going to help you in the grocery store? Well, I don't know, but I need it. So I kept it in the car. And finally he said, this is ridiculous. Get rid of it. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. I don't use it. But I was so afraid to get rid of it for fear I would need it that I always kept it with me. And so men and even women, but men after their surgery, once they start to get dry and their pad is not wet and they can pee in the toilet, and this is a whole process. It takes me a full hour to educate men on this process prior to their surgery. But my point is that once they learn they can control this muscle and learn to make it work, they can get better. The statistics say 5 to 87% of men are incontinent post-surgery. Now, why is there such a huge range in that number? The reason is some of them use pads. Some of the literature says, oh, well, if you're continent, that's one pad a day. Well, if you need a pad, that's not continent. If you need a pad, it's because you're incontinent. So it makes the interpretation of this clinical studies difficult. Use of pads in men clinically significantly changes their quality of life. They're upset because they have to depend on a pad. Many women might say, well, I had my menstrual periods for so long, I'm used to pads, I'm okay. Not men. They've never had to do this, and it's different for them. How long does it take for a man to get better? Recovery can be from several weeks to numerous months. And the goal statistically says between 6 and 18 months. In our facility, here in my town and my community where I live in, we want them dry by 9 months.
Wow.
And dry means no pads. So
wow.
That's the goal. So it depends. There's so much out there on this. Yes, this is a whole show by itself.
You need to be cloned, you know? I mean, there just aren't people like, no wonder you're one of six in the Northeast that are certified in this. I mean, we need more people like you because this is information that most of us know nothing about, and we just have all accepted, hey, it's just the way it is.
We've accepted it's okay. And we've accepted
you're blowing
that
all barriers.
I have to listen.
I think it's great. But I've gave you more than 5 minutes on men. So what I want to do is I'm going to ask everybody that if you've got a serious question, to throw it on the blog, and because I want Jane to take these last couple of minutes and talk about the exercises, because I promised her that. So unless you have a pressing problem or question that we did not talk about, please press 1, and we'll take your question in just a few minutes. But if you don't, and you don't mind throwing it over on the Facebook blog, which is on Facebook, and it's the Whole Scoop Radio blog, so just find us there and send us questions, and we'll do our best to get you the answers if we didn't already talk about it. And I'm going to ask you right now, Jane, to come on back, and we'll reschedule and do a follow-up, okay?
Just to give you folks an idea, I teach a 30-hour course to healthcare providers on this topic. So we're trying to cover a ton of stuff in an hour. But the most important thing for all of you to go home with is, how do you do this exercise? So the exercise became famous with Dr. Arnold Kegel back in the 1940s. We all know it as a Kegel exercise. It's just become more sophisticated with the more knowledge that we have. The reality is this exercise was developed in 1932 by a Dr. Josh Davies from New York City. So Arnold Kegel said, okay, I can teach women how to squeeze this muscle against a pressure device called a perineal perionometer. And if they squeeze against this device and repeat this exercise over the course of time, they will learn to strengthen their pelvic floor muscle. And he treated over 3,000 women and had something like a 75 to 90% success rate in terms of preventing or eliminating incontinence. Can you prevent it forever? The answer is you have to keep up with the exercise. Remember the old phrase, if you don't use it, you lose it. That's exactly the case here. So in the 1950s, Arnold Kegel had a slogan that said, make it tight at the light, meaning if you're at a traffic light, squeeze your muscle a few times. We now know today there's two types of exercises to do when you're strengthening this muscle. So wherever you are, if you're sitting, if you're standing, if you're lying down, what I want you to do is focus on the very back of your muscle. That's right, around where you make a toot or where you poop. That's called your anus. And in that space between your anus and your vagina is the perineum. That's the bulk of the muscle. The action of the muscle starts back there. And you squeeze as if you don't want to pass gas. So imagine yourself standing in a crowded elevator next to the person you admire most, but you have a really gassy belly. What are you going to do? You're going to squeeze that muscle. That's the muscle you want to squeeze, or you don't want to have diarrhea. You squeeze it and you hold it for a count of two and you rest it. You let it go. When you squeeze it, it kind of moves towards your head. It only moves about a half an inch, so it doesn't go very far, but you feel the action tighten in. When you release it, you let it go. And when you release it, it moves down towards the ground, towards your feet. Squeeze it and release it. Do that 10 to 20 times in a row. Squeeze it for two.
How are they sitting when they do this? Are they sitting in the position you said earlier, or are they standing? Doing this.
You could stand, you could do it in the grocery line, you could do it lying in bed. Some people do it to fall asleep. It's a great way to fall asleep at night because it's like counting sheep. Some people do it when they wake up. Some do it in the shower. Some do it at their desk when they're checking their email. Some do it standing at the stove, stirring food. Whatever the case is, you have to find your time and your place to do this. There are apps for your phone called Kegel apps. You can go down that road if that's what you choose to do. So you squeeze it and you release it. You squeeze it and you release it. You do it 10 to 20 times in a row. If you do it 10 times in a row, you're going to repeat that 6 times a day for a total of 60 of those quick contractions and releases. Quick squeeze and a release. Quick squeeze and a release. If you do it 3 times a day, you would do 20 in a row, but you still get the 60 in that you need. When I buckle my seatbelt when I get in my car, I do 10 of those quick flicks. Bing, bing, bing. They're done in 60 seconds. But there's another muscle in the pelvis, part of the pelvic floor, and that is the deep layer called the pelvic diaphragm. That muscle has to squeeze and hold for a count of 10. It helps support the organs inside. And so you're going to squeeze and hold, 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 keep holding, keep holding, keep holding, keep holding, and release. So when you squeeze, you should feel it go in. When you release, you should feel it let go. When you release it, if it doesn't let go, it means it's either stuck tight or it means you let it go a long time ago because you didn't have the strength. Because we can't see the muscle, we're not able to know what it's doing. But you want to try to squeeze it without using your stomach, without squeezing your legs, without squeezing your buttocks, without seeing any other muscle move. And if you can do that and do it for a count of 10 and hold it for 10 and rest it for 20, 10 times in a row, that's 5 minutes, you got it. So you do that every day. It's a lot of work, yes, but you can set your iPhone as a reminder. You can use stickers. You can find events. Some people put little stickies like on the bathroom mirror, on the microwave, on their computer screen, on their mouse, on their cell phone, on the rearview mirror of their car, wherever they want these stickers, and they go, oh, there's the sticker, I got to do my exercises.
And you can do this. You can do it even when you're standing up and talking to somebody, right? I mean, they don't need to know what you're doing.
I have done it standing in front of an audience of 200 people, and nobody knows because you can't see anything moving because it's a hidden muscle. It's inside your body. It's just under your control.
And these are exercises for everybody, right?
Absolutely. However, let me add to that. If you do these exercises and you say, well, that's a joke. It didn't do anything. It means your muscle's too tight. And that's a whole lot more information for another show. Because if your muscle's too tight, the exercises won't help. And that's part of the paradox of this muscle. So sure, a weak muscle will respond if you exercise it. You'll strengthen it. But what if it's already tight?
Mm-hmm.
Then if you try to strengthen it, you're creating more of the problem, not helping.
Right. Interesting. Well, you know what? You did a great job, Jane, because we are almost right out of time, and I want to thank everybody for indulging us on those questions. And I'm going to get to that blog, and we'll see where we are. But, Jane, I'm going to call you back on the number you just called in on when we're done here so that we can reschedule. So we can schedule you again, because I know I can hear the questions in people's heads, and I know what I'm going to get from the people that didn't call in. You know, I thought about this, I want that, I thought about this, you know, it's all good. So
my biggest advice is think about this, and if you say, wait a minute, I pee, I don't want to pee anymore, I have this problem, I need to address it. That's
right.
An important piece to remember. The hardest part is saying, I have a problem and I have to fix it. That's the hardest part. The rest is easy. It can get fixed. But if you feel this is an issue for you, by all means, pay attention. Try the exercises. If they don't work for you, you may have a deeper problem than that, but we can still fix it. So there are things you can do. Leaking is not allowed.
There you go.
Period.
Leaking is not allowed, and you don't have to be wet after prostate surgery for very long. So I like that.
Right.
We learned a lot tonight. I can't thank you enough for being here, everybody.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You're wonderful,
Jane,
and I look
Thank
forward
you.
To having you again. I'm going to call you on this number, but I want to let everybody know our next show is going to be on the 13th of October when we're doing the show. You've asked for it. You're going to get it. We're going to do it. It's medical marijuana, and we're going to talk about the pros and cons of the health effects of medical marijuana. So look forward to that. See you in a couple of weeks, everybody. I'm going to say goodnight, and thank you so much, and we'll see you again. Night, everybody.
Thank you.
Night, Jane. Jane, do you want to give your website out one more time?
Sure. www.phoenixpt.com, all lowercase.
Great. And you can throw a question my direction for the show if you want at Naturally Nutrition, Inc., Okay. Good night, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.